The first interviews that Pink Floyd gave was in Canada, on CBC. There are precious few recordings of Syd Barrett talking about those early days, and this is one of the few. Syd Barrett, Roger Walters, and Nick Mason on CBC.
In a frenetic haze of sound and sight, a new concept of music has begun to penetrate the senses of Britain's already hopped-up beat fans. Some call it free sound. Others prefer to include it in the psychedelic wave of isms already circulating around the Western Hemisphere. But this music, here and now, is that of the Pink Floyd, a group of four young musicians, a light man, and an array of equipment sadistically designed to shatter the strongest nerves. The Pink Floyd are new on the London scene. They've stupefied audiences at all-night raves, in church halls, at the Albert Hall, and on various tours in Britain. They've yet to make their debut on records. But perhaps the Pink Floyd themselves are most qualified to tell you what it's all about.
We didn't start out trying to get anything new, you know, it entirely happened. We originally started virtually as an R&B group.
Yeah, sometimes we just sort of let loose a bit and started hitting the guitar a bit harder and not worrying quite so much about the chords.
It stopped being sort of third-rate academic rock, you know. It started being sort of intuitive groove, really.
It's free form. In sort of terms of construction, it's almost like jazz, where you start off with a riff and then you improvise on this, except
it's
to some extent the improvisation.
Where it differs from jazz is that if you're improvising around a jazz number, if it's a 16-bar number, you stick to 16-bar choruses. You take 16-bar solos, whereas with us it starts and we may play three choruses of something that lasts for 17 and a half bars each chorus, and then it'll all start happening, and yeah. It'll stop happening when it stops happening, and it may be 423 bars later, or four.
And it's not like jazz music, because
we all want to be pop stars, we don't want to be jazz musicians.
Yeah, exactly, and I mean, we play for people to dance to, they don't seem to dance much now. Well, that's the initial idea. So we play loudly, and we're playing with electric guitars. So, we're utilising all the volume and all the effects you can get.
But now, in fact, we're trying to develop this by using the light.
Yes, of course.
But the thing about the jazz thing is that we don't have this great musician thing, you know. We don't really look upon ourselves as musicians as such, you know, period. Reading the dots, all that stuff.
How important is the visual aspect of the production?
Very,
very important. It's quite a revelation to have people operating something like lights while you're playing, as a direct stimulus to what you're playing. It's rather like audience reaction, except it's sort of on a higher level. You know, you can respond to it, and then the lights will respond back.
There are various sorts of lights. There's simply flashing spotlights that are worked off a sort of control board, rather like a piano, so that they can be used very rhythmically. And then there are a sort of effect lights that are usually coloured slides or wet slides, which are slides with some sort of liquids on them, so that you get some movement. Or they might be actual movies, such, in which case, as they have their own set speed and sequence that can't be altered by the operators, this changes this formation to some extent, because we tend immediately to play to that.
Mm. What happens at a performance? What happens with your audience? What's the feel you get?
Well, if we get very excited, and we get very excited when we're playing very well, then the audience gets very excited as well, you know.
Do they dance?
They may dance. It depends upon the sort of number and what's happening.
Yeah, and anyway, you hardly ever get the sort of dancing right from the beginning that you get just as a response to the rhythm. Usually people stand there, and if they sort of work themselves into some sort of hysteria while they're there.
Yes, the dancing takes the form of a frenzy, which is very good.
They don't all stand in a line and do the Madsen. The audience tend to be standing there, and just one or two people maybe will suddenly flip out and rush forward and start leaping up and down, you know.
Freak out, I think, is probably the word they're searching for.
It's an excellent thing, because this is what dancing is.
This is really what dancing is.
Thank you.
Is this then the music destined to replace the Beatles? Are the melodic harmonies, poetic lyrics, and soulful rhythms of today to be swept into the archives, totally undermined by a psychotic sweep of sound and vision such as this displayed by the Pink Floyd? Large pockets of enthusiasts from all over the country are determined that it shall, despite the powerful opposition of the majority of leading disc jockeys. But the most enthusiastic fans of all, quite fittingly, are the Pink Floyd's managers.
I heard them once. I was in a very bad mood. I was at a club and heard them. And the sort of sound they were making was a sound I hadn't heard before, and I was just totally knocked out. I suppose I felt there was a sort of freshness about what they were doing. There was a sort of freedom about the way they were playing. They weren't just hacking through the old numbers, playing all the old hits of yesterday and today, and sort of you didn't feel that there was a sort of a regimented group just going through the motions. You know, there was a sort of fantastic liveness about it, and these sort of huge sheets of sound were building up, you know, and this was a sound I hadn't heard before, and I immediately was completely knocked out by it and started getting interested in them. The sort of whole light scene and things like this sort of came out from, I suppose, a different direction. I mean, in a way, this did come from quotes, the psychedelic movement sort of thing, as far as I was concerned. It's always been a thing which I've dug. You know, I've always thought that lights and music and things like that and sounds and vision should all go together. And it sort of seemed the right time for it to happen. I think another thing which is very important is that, you know, one feels that the pop market, as it were, is now capable of taking something far more than it used to. You know, previously it was all sort of Jim Reeves and very sort of simple things played over and over again. But increasingly I noticed at clubs that the thing which always seemed to get the really huge applause always were not the instrumentals, the things when the musicians really gave themselves a chance to really do something new and different. And sort of out of this whole sort of rock and roll movement, you've got a sort of an instantly attractive beat, a very strong beat, a very powerful beat, which anyone can respond to. And then on top of this, you've got the electronic thing, which gives you this fantastic dynamics and excitement and an ability just to sort of pierce through people's sometimes deadness, you know. One can penetrate right through into their minds, almost sheerly by sort of volume and sound and noise and distortion. That gives a tremendous increased awareness of what's going on. You know, you hear things much more. When you finish listening to Pink Floyd, you don't just clap and sort of hum the tune they've just been playing. You just go, whoa! You know, it's an experience. You've been through a total sort of sensory experience, both visual and audio. And I think this has an appeal not only to intellectuals. I mean, there's a lot of in common, say, between the Pink Floyd and what people like Albert Ayler and Ornette Coleman are doing, but it's got also an immediacy of appeal to the kids, which I think is great. And it's a sort of a common denominator which can go right across. Anyone can dig the Pink Floyd, I think.
Can you capture this strictly on sound? Let's say in terms of recordings.
I think our records will be very different from our stage shows. I think our records inevitably, first of all, there's a 3-minute limitation. Secondly, you can't sort of walk around the kitchen humming to the Pink Floyd. I mean, if you had a Pink Floyd, the sort of sound they're making in the clubs, coming over the radio while you're doing the washing up, you'd probably scream. I suspect that our records are bound to have to be much more audio, much more, you know, they are written for a different situation. Listening to a gramophone record in your home or on the radio is very different from going into a club or into a theatre and watching a stage show. They're two different things. It requires a different approach. We think we can do both.